Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A new flower massacre in the last hour at the Kuwaiti roundabout in Gaza. Again, Israeli forces opening fire on people scrambling for food. It's the second of those flower massacres. Hundreds died and were wounded when Israelis opened fire in the previous one. Joe Biden answered it by dropping a few loaves and fishes by parachute. And yes, it was for Gaza that I stood and won the Rochdale by-election last Thursday. And right after this show, my good wife and I set out for London, unexpectedly emerging as the leader of the opposition in Britain, where millions of people are behind me. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Rishi Sunak, the diminutive, diminished and degraded British Prime Minister, clearly hasn't assimilated well enough. Otherwise, he'd have known that members of Parliament in Britain are chosen by the voters, by the electorate in democratic elections. They are not chosen by little Napoleon stunts outside the number 10 Downing Street, where standing on an exceedingly tall platform, Rishi Sunak lectured the British people on how alarming it was that they had voted for me, and not just in Rochdale. It has emerged through all the medium possible in the comments on newspaper articles, in the comments under mainstream media videos. It has emerged in a mailbag, thousands and thousands, and I mean thousands, of pieces of correspondence, Strong, that the spark lit in Rochdale on Thursday was a spark whose time has come. And the tinder lies all over this country. The truth is, when you've got a political class that demonstrably is two cheeks of the same backside, that almost identical Tweedledee and Tweedledum politics, that millions feel locked out of the political democratic process. Usually they have no choice. Indeed, the parties count on them having no meaningful choice, no ability to affect the political direction of the country either way. They count on that. But when someone comes along with experience, with some God-given ability, and with the credibility to present themselves as a possible winner, a slayer of the dragons, well, poodles of Labour and Conservative, then they are ready to go for it. Nigel Farage proved it with his Brexit Party victory in the last European Parliament elections in Britain. And we proved it all over again in Rochdale on Thursday, when people get a chance to whack that two-cheeked ass, they take it, they do it. And it has resounded, that spanking, all over the country. And I know, I can prove, that I am going to Parliament overnight tonight with the good wishes, the goodwill, and the high hopes of millions of British people hitherto unrepresented or underrepresented by the mainstream political parties. A beauty has been born. All is changed, changed utterly. And I intend to drive home the point. I will attempt to rise at Prime Minister's questions on Wednesday. I expect the Speaker will call me, as I'm the Member of Parliament with the freshest and biggest mandate in the House. And I'll be asking both of these twins, these diminutive toddler twins, Sunak and Starmer, if they are listening, if they have heard the British people. Early signs are that they have not. Although I want to throw into the discourse my reading of what is currently underway and the reason why I think the British general election will not be long delayed. It seems to me from the little lectern stunt outside 10 Downing Street that Rishi Sunak, despairing of all else, has happened upon what he thinks will be a wedge issue between him and Labour. That wedge issue is the M word, Muslims. Gaza is the proximate cause. But when Sunak said what he said about the threat to British democracy, a bit rich coming from a little man for whom no one has ever voted and whose foreign secretary in charge of Britain's foreign policy is also an unelected member of the House of Lords. But democracy, mobs, Muslims, all the M's, the fanaticism, extremism, and other bad words that are now attributed to Britain's 4 million Muslims is not random. It is not dissociative thinking. It is not something that just occurred to him on his Royal Air Force flight at great public expense from Aberdeen to London to make what was a blatantly party political stunt outside number 10 Downing Street, something I intend to have inquired into. It didn't just occur to him as he flew from Aberdeen to London. It's a plan. It's a fiendish plan. It's a plan that is pregnant with all kinds of disruption to Britain's social peace. For example, banning marches for Gaza, restricting people's right to protest, cracking down even further on people's right to freedom of speech. And it was a cue, probably a coordinated cue, for the release, the sluice gates to open, for the release of millions of words worth of anti-Muslim sewage in the ever-dependable British media. From the gutter media to the fur coat and no knickers media. All of them were filled with the same basic poisonous narrative that Britain has a Muslim problem, that British Muslims are violent, that they are potentially terrorist, and that these marches over Gaza are radicalizing the population of Britain, contaminating non-Muslims, who of course are the majority in the marches and demonstrations on every single march in the country. This is a very important caveat to make. Most of the people, 73% of the British population, who demand an end to the slaughter in Gaza, are not Muslims at all. They are white English people. They are white Scottish, Welsh, and Irish people. They are not people from the subcontinent or other British former colonies. But the narrative is that these people are being radicalized, extremized by the Muslims within. Although, when asked on television this morning, as he was in full flow about it, Jeremy Hunt, I said, the Chancellor of the British Exchequer, when asked, who are these Muslim organizations that you say are hijacking the demonstrations against the war on the people of Gaza every single weekend in this country, Hunt was unable to answer. For, of course, extremist organizations are there none. The vast majority, 99.9% of the people on these marches are entirely peaceful and democratic people. And the notion that by voting for the wrong candidate in a democratic election, that people have sabotaged democracy, endangered democracy, is, of course, a perversity only possible within the British political class. Voting for the wrong person now appears to be an act of extremism. And so stand by for that wedge issue to be driven home, for a gap to be opened up. Why does he think that might save the election for him? Because of my victory and because of the possibility of other such victories up and down the length and breadth of this country, he has placed Keir Starmer behind the eight ball. If Starmer comes out fighting for the Muslims in Britain and for the rights to protest democratically, peacefully in Britain, and if he does that, I'm a Dutchman. If he were to do that, Sunak hopes that he will be able to capitalize on the incipient racism that the media will incessantly send pulsing through the British political airwaves and through the election run-up. If, on the other hand, Sunak joins in a kind of Dutch auction with Sunak, vying with Sunak for how beastly, how mean, how punitive he can be against the so-called extremists, then a very substantial number of Britain's Muslims will vote for us, the Workers' Party of Britain, and vote for independents who are standing in constituencies from Ilford in the far east of London to Bethnal Green in the heart of the city of London, in the city of Birmingham, throughout the northwest, Bolton, Oldham, Bury, Tameside in Greater Manchester, Rochdale, of course, and many, Blackburn, many, many other places. If it's an election in which Starmer and Sunak are vying as to who can be more vile about the Muslims, then we will pick up the votes. Starmer will fail to win seats he had banked on winning, and Sunak might, against all odds, emerge as the Prime Minister again. But in so doing, they will scar the face of British politics. They will scar the face of British society. They will risk social peace in the country, and they'll make Britain as degraded and diminished as the two leaders of the main parties have become. There'll be more of that in the course of the show. There's no royalty on the left, but if there was, Craig Murray and Abby Martin would probably be the king and queen, although both are happily married to other spouses, I quickly add. We've got Craig Murray on to talk about British politics, about the noxious, poisonous state of British politics. Noxious and poisonous, not for the reasons that the party leaders say that it is, but because of the party leaders, their conduct in office. As someone said to me today, this afternoon, when I was watching my eldest son play football in Manchester, there were more arrests at Glastonbury than there have been in all of the pro-Palestine marches up and down the length and breadth of this country. Never fall for the lie that going out to hold a placard and to protest against the slaughter of women, children, men in Gaza trapped in a cage is any kind of extremism. The extremism is supporting the slaughter of the innocents, to which I now turn. I learned from Al Jazeera in the last hour that there has been a second massacre in Gaza, a second flower massacre. A flower massacre is where trucks finally make it into the Gaza Strip and begin distributing flowers, starving people swarm around the trucks in sufficient numbers to be shot like fish in a barrel. It happened last week. It's happened again this evening. I want to ask you if you can imagine a greater act of barbarism than to reduce people to mass starvation, sickness and disease, And then when they finally have the possibility of the flour to make themselves a piece of bread to eat, tanks, shells, and machine guns open fire upon them. I want to ask you if you can imagine what it must be like to be a supporter of this barbarism. Our political leaders, you in the United States, we in the United Kingdom, you in France, you in Germany, you in all the countries of the West in which most of you are watching this show, can you imagine the sheer evil of your political leaders who support this kind of thing, who declare themselves to be friends of Israel? In the course of the last 150 days, not one single member of parliament in Britain from the Labour Friends of Israel, the Conservative Friends of Israel, the Liberal Democrat Friends of Israel, not one of them, not one, has resigned as a friend of Israel, even though the world has seen 112,000 people murdered, maimed, or missing under the rubble over that 150 days. I don't know quite what first attracted all these parliamentarians to become friends of Israel rather than, say, friends of Zimbabwe or friends of Turkmenistan. I don't know what it was that first attracted them to become friends of Israel. And I sure don't know how, after the evidence of their own eyes of this last 4.5 months, they could conceivably continue to be friends of such savagery, friends of such evil, an evil the likes of which we have not seen since the end of the Second World War, when the glorious Red Army smashed down the gates of all those concentration camps and revealed the depths of the barbarity of the beasts of Berlin. I don't know where this is going to end. A good friend of mine who owns this studio asked me just a minute ago, where's this going to end? I'm afraid I'm not able even to hazard a guess about that. I'm not one of these who restricts my demand to a ceasefire. A ceasefire is a necessary but woefully insufficient condition to end the barbarism of 76 years against the Palestinian people. Indeed, I caution my friends into restricting their demands to a simple ceasefire, because I have lived through so many ceasefires before. The ceasefires never end the occupation. The ceasefires never end the starvation. The ceasefires never end the mass incarceration of young Palestinians in Israeli dungeons. The ceasefires never give the right of self-determination to the Palestinian people, their legal and their moral rights. And so my demands are not only for a ceasefire. We need a ceasefire. We need the complete Israeli withdrawal from the occupied territories. We need the abolition of the apartheid state's hold over the illegally acquired and held Palestinian territories of East Jerusalem, of the West Bank, and of Gaza. And the leaders of the world who claim still to believe in a two-state solution have an absolute obligation now to put this solution on the table, or the rest of us will conclude that it is a mirage. The rest of us will conclude that it is throwing sand in the eyes of their public, holding out the chimera of a two-state solution to protect Israel and its barbaric occupation, which has been going on now for well over half a century. These are the minimum demands. I myself believe that such a state of affairs would not solve the Palestinian-Israeli problem. For a start, there are millions of Palestinians scattered in refugee camps in the countries nearby, and in a town or street near you, in Canada, America, Britain, all over the world, you'll find Palestinian refugees scattered. It's not a solution if they cannot return home to their own lands, to their own houses, to the property that was stolen from them when their grandparents were driven out at gunpoint in an earlier iteration of the kind of savagery you've been watching over the last 4.5 months. But the minimum demands must be pressed home and must be recognized and must be delivered. Now, a ceasefire, the end of Israel's presence in the occupied territories, according to international law, the freeing of all prisoners, hostages, call them as you will, in an all-for-all prisoner exchange, and the immediate establishment of a Palestinian state. What's wrong with that? It's the mother of all talk shows.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Craig Murray is an historian, a former British ambassador, and now human rights activist, court reporter, and all-round sage, one of the wisest men I've ever met. The Honourable Craig Murray joins us now. Craig, thank you for coming back on the Mother of All Talk Shows. I wanted to ask you if you agreed with me that the most significant thing about the Rochdale by-election result was that the Conservatives and Labour didn't even compete for second place, never mind first, that I won a thumping majority and in second place was a completely unknown independent. Unknown outside Rochdale, he's an estimable figure in Rochdale, but he didn't figure in the bookie's odds. He wasn't featured in a single one of the pre-election day coverage in any of the features on broadcast or print media, yet he came second. The Tories were a miserable third, and Labour, I think, came fifth, if not sixth. It's a big rejection of the two big parties, isn't it?
It's fantastic, George. And I must start by congratulating you. It's great to be talking to George Galloway, MP, again.
Thank you very much.
You know, you've given a lot of people a lot of hope and a big boost and an understanding that it is possible to beat the system, but no matter how powerful the political class may be, no matter how much they've got the mainstream media in particular under their thumb, the broadcast media, no matter how much they seek to control the narrative, given a chance, the people will reject them. And as you say, the people didn't only elect you, they put an unknown person who I'd never even heard his name until the declaration, to be honest, who came in a very good second place. And they totally rejected, absolutely rejected, both the Labour and the Conservative parties, who are politically identical. And in terms of the actual spectrum of political opinion, If you've got the left at zero and the right at 100 as your measure of political opinion, then the Labour Party is at, 68 and the Tory Party is at 72. That's the kind of range of possible political opinion people have a choice of in the party system. And it's hopefully a harbinger that we can take on from by-elections and into the forthcoming general election with more people having the chance to reject the two parties. I think that's what we have to hope will happen.
The little stunt I said, that Sunak pulled, flying on an RAF jet from Aberdeen to London, for using state resources for what was to be an obviously party political stunt outside Number 10. It was alarming, I might even say beyond alarming, in its content, didn't you think?
I thought it was hilarious. I thought Sunak should be praised for entertaining the nation with his statement that there is a huge danger to democracy, and the danger to democracy is people voting. people must not be allowed to vote the way the establishment doesn't want them to vote. Otherwise, democracy is in danger, because democracy can only be voting for the establishment, and anything else is a threat. So the forms of democratic activity, the normal forms of democratic activity, like leafleting or rallying, demonstrating to show what you believe in, attempting to convince people by argument, and even standing for election, those are all portrayed as being anti-democratic. It's all well on stilts. It's absolutely astonishing. And it is sinister. And of course, it's extremely sinister that the state is declaring its intention almost to put back democracy or to reduce the space for argument. It was hard to believe what he means by it, unless he means that in some way people should be prevented from protesting or prevented from standing for election if they have the wrong views. It's hard to understand what he actually means as a consequence of what he was saying. But on the other hand, it was so pathetic in its delivery that it's very hard not to laugh at it. My feeling is that the majority of the British population are laughing at Sunak tonight. It's not, they're not going along with his nonsense.
Although it was carefully coordinated with the media, I can testify to that. There was I thinking I was about to have a victory party when suddenly the entire British media came in with their cameras pointing like machine guns, faces like thunder, and sonorously asked me if this was not a dire emergency, that the people had voted the way they had. And then I picked up the newspapers on Saturday. I very rarely buy newspapers now. I don't like trees being cut down needlessly. But I bought them so I could spread them all out on the floor. And it was a tidal wave of anti-Muslim hatred, Craig.
Now, I think this was always going to have to be the result. They found that the popular resistance to the genocide of the Palestinians is something they didn't expect. And the reason they didn't anticipate it is, as you know very well, most of the political and media class are sociopaths. They actually don't care about society at all. They only care about themselves. So they can't understand. They literally cannot empathize. Someone like Keir Starmer cannot understand. But ordinary people are genuinely concerned about the massacre of Palestinian children, because ordinary people don't want children massacred. And that may sound axiomatic to you or me, but it's very, very hard for these sociopaths to get into their heads that the opposition to what they are doing is a general and natural reaction of the majority of the population. So they've lost control of the narrative big time. And the reaction to that on their part was always to be to stoke up Islamophobia. And that we're seeing that in a big way. And my worry is that we're going to go back to where we were in the war on terror 20 years ago, so-called war on terror, where we'll see young Muslim men arrested for plots which don't really exist. You may remember things like the ricin plot, which was front page everywhere, and actually there was no ricin whatsoever. The fact there was no ricin was top secret for 2 years. We had the Easter bomb plot in Manchester, where the police announced they'd seized ingredients of a fertilizer bomb, and it turned out the ingredient they had seized was sugar from somebody's kitchen. So I think we're going to see that kind of official ramping up of the Islamophobic narrative, and we may even see, you know, agent provocateur or false flag terrorism by the authorities. That's where I think they have to go next, having lost control of a narrative. So these are very, very scary times.
They are. And of course, you can get real terrorists too. One of the things which puzzles me that nobody in the media is willing to grasp is that people like thee and me are trying to encourage Muslims to follow peaceful and democratic paths, political paths, by voting for people like thee and me. I recall very well your epic battle with Jack Straw in the constituency of Blackburn in the immediate aftermath of the Iraq invasion and in the midst of its occupation. We were the people saying to Muslims, we know you're angry, you're right to be angry. The best way to be angry is by joining the political process and voting. But of course, there are real extremists on the rocks, siren voices, seeking to lure young Muslims onto those rocks of sectarianism, separatism, and even violence. Does it surprise you that nobody, not even the so-called liberals in the likes of The Guardian, The Observer, and so on, ever seem to give that a moment of thought?
Yeah, that's true. And when violence does happen, because people are driven beyond endurance, then they never give a moment's thought to what actually caused it and the fact that this doesn't occur out of a vacuum. And that, of course, relates back to what happened in Israel-Palestine on 7th of October, where you have a people basically driven crazy by continued oppression, by situations of siege, by repeated killings, beatings, detentions, and rapes of the population by an oppressive colonial power. And that, of course, is going to result eventually in a violent reaction. And if you look back through history, if you look at the history of the British Empire, for example, you find that, you know, wherever there was a local attempt to resist occupation by the British forces, you then have atrocity stories. You have the Black Hole of Calcutta, for example, which we were taught about at school, and those kind of atrocity stories, which do relate to terrible incidents that happened, but they are the outrage of a colonized, exploited, and brutalized population trying to express themselves. And the Mau Mau Rebellion would be a more recent one. And those narratives are then always used by the occupier to demonize and dehumanize the occupied population and to justify what they call the civilizing mission, of course, to say we are a superior culture, we are superior people, and look what these awful people do if they're not kept under in conditions of slavery. So I think we are liable to see violent reaction caused by this terrible oppression. Of course, we condemn violent reaction when it harms innocent people. That's not the way we want to see people go at all. We want to channel it into political action, effective political action. But the causes of the violence are never ever addressed by the liberal media.
Finally, Craig, in your long experience, have you ever found a conundrum like this one? Israel is invading and has long been besieging the Gaza Strip, courtesy of the United States of America. American weapons, American money, American diplomatic and UN cover, vetoes, and all the rest. And the same power which pays for and facilitates all of that then drops the equivalent of one packed lunch per person for one day by parachute from their own aircraft. Because that's what happened yesterday, wasn't it, in Gaza? Biden broke the siege which he himself is maintaining, and only for the photographs.
Yeah, it wasn't a serious attempt to maintain the siege at all, and it would only be a packed lunch for a small proportion of the Gazan population. And it would be interesting to know how many of those planes which were dropping the packed lunches had previously been used to actually carry the bombs to Israel, because I think you'll probably find that some of those actual same planes had carried the bombs and shells but were killing the people who now they were giving a packed lunch. So the whole thing is utterly obscene. I mean, that was a PR exercise to try to reduce the anger of his own population towards Biden at his support for genocide. And it's a kind of sickening hypocrisy, a sickening hypocrisy. And today we have yet more massacre, yet more killing, and there's no sign of an end to it, unfortunately.
Honourable Craig Murray, as always, thank you for your wisdom here on the Mother of All Talk Shows. I'll be back after this brief break. Stay tuned.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Now, the Americans don't do royalty. In fact, they fought a revolution to overthrow the rule of unelected monarchs and kings. But if they did do royalty, my next guest would definitely be in the royal family. She's Abby Martin, one of the finest filmmakers and host of the Empire Files, one of the most impressive journalists and broadcasters I've ever worked with. And I'm glad to say she joins us on the Mother of All Talk Shows now. Abby, welcome back. It's been some time. What were your thoughts when you saw the beneficence of Joe Biden parachuting in some loaves and fishes, not to feed the multitudes in the Gaza Strip? Both you and I know the Gaza Strip very well. You made a wonderful series of films about it. Were you as sickened by me at the revolting fare that was dropping from the air from American Air Force jets?
Well, first of all, George, congratulations on your resounding victory. I think I could speak on behalf of the world when I say we are thrilled to have you back in office. I mean, look, Joe Biden is a genocider. He's a criminal. He's sitting there eating ice cream, pontificating on, oh, maybe we can have a ceasefire next week or perhaps the week after. It's an abomination as 2.3 million people less now since so many scores have been killed. But starvation has taken hold, George, and we know that dropping a mere 28,000, I think, aid packets, food packets, as bombs are also simultaneously being dropped while people are starving to death. What does that do? It's a drop in the bucket. And you have the audacity of publications like the New York Times, who just ran with a falsified story about mass rape taking place, hiring random psychopaths to adjudicate the atrocities on October 7th. And they're writing haikus, trying to talk around this nonsense on the heels of this massacre, this widespread massacre where Israeli tanks and snipers open fire on Palestinians scavenging, starving to death. George, this is what we're dealing with. It's complete moral bankruptcy from the entire world. And look at two Congress people in our Congress, Cori Bush and Rashida Tlaib. They're the only people who have pledged to stop arming this genocidal apartheid state. I'm embarrassed to be an American. I'm embarrassed that this is the political representation that we have 5 months in to this genocide, George?
It is very powerful, as you express it. Let's leave, if you like, the superficial politics behind and dive deeper. It has to be a matter of deep psychology for so many politicians in your country and in mine to be as unmoved by what you and I are watching as we are moved by it. What lies beneath it? What's the reason for our politicians being completely unmoved at massacres of infants, at the maiming, amputations, and, you know, heads burst open of little babies being taken to now non-existent hospitals? How is it possible not to be moved by that?
5 months of seeing children shredded apart. I do not know the answer to that, George, other than political cowardice and the fact that these politicians only care about one thing and one thing only, their political careers. You do not get into politics in either of our countries if you are a moral person, other than, of course, people like you. I mean, it is unbelievable and disgusting to see the amount of politicians completely beholden to a genocidal apartheid state committing genocide. I mean, killing scores of civilians, women, infants. Like you said, I mean, this is a genocidal policy. You are depriving infants of formula and nursing mothers of water. Look, Joe Biden said it himself, and I think he elucidated it perfectly decades ago on the House floor when he said, if Israel didn't exist, we would need to create her to serve our interests. And when you look at Israel, I mean, this tiny state, I mean, it might as well be the 51st state. It's an appendage of the U.S. empire. It's a settler colonial outpost, and it's used as a battering ram for U.S. imperialism and its junior collaborators, which is the United Kingdom. So it's sick that, I mean, you see Code Pink, you see 5 months of people confronting politicians in the halls of Congress, marching out in the streets, doing civil disobedience actions everywhere, right? And these politicians remain unmoved, unmoved. How is that possible? How are you a human being? How is it possible that John Kirby's sitting up there crying crocodile tears for children in Ukraine and is completely stoic as infant after infant are shredded to bits? I can't claim to know, George. I'm sitting here every day wrapping my mind around the medieval barbarism that we're seeing unfold, that really just surpass the human limitations of evil every single day.
It has brought the worst out in our public officials, but it has also brought the best out in our public. There's never been an anti-war movement like the one we have now for an end to the slaughter in Gaza. In Britain, for now, it's almost 150 days, I think. There has not been a single day when there has not been a significant action, even in the smallest towns. I lived until Thursday in a very small town in Scotland where a small number, but a dedicated number of people were out protesting every day. And that's true in every village, town, hamlet, city, throughout the United Kingdom. And I'm certain it's also true in the US.
Indeed. I mean, I was radicalized on the heels of the Iraq War in a post 9/11 frenzy of Islamophobia and just rabid nationalism and unquestioning patriotism. And I think that finally we're seeing a new internationalist anti-war movement that's questioning U.S. empire, finally, that's tying all of these disparate movements together, understanding that no one's free until all of us are free, finally humanizing Palestinians, finally rejecting the dogma of the corporate media, the orthodoxy of U.S. capitalism. It's a beautiful thing to witness, George. It's very unfortunate that there has to be a massacre of this magnitude for so many people to wake up, but I am here for it. I'm here for it. I'm here for the rejection of the two-party system. I'm here for Gen Z saying, no, we're not going to vote for genociders. We're not going to vote for a party that's committing genocide. It's beautiful to see so many tens of millions of people around the world rejecting this, George, despite the detachment and the disenfranchisement of our political system and our representation, the people that claim to represent us but do not. There's such a severe detachment from our government to the people in the streets. And they're depending on us getting tired, right? They want us to forget. Well, no, we see with our own eyes. We're not going to get tired. We know what justice looks like. And we're not going to stop until that's achieved. And that means Palestine being free. It doesn't just mean an end to the bloodletting. It means an end to the occupation, and it means the liberation of Palestine. And it's an incredible thing to see this global movement taking root. And it's not going to stop, George. I think we both know that. And that's what terrifies them.
Yeah, I think that's true. Now, as well as being activists, both of us are also involved in media, although YouTube, I think, wiped out a lot of your work, some of the finest work produced in the English language, was wiped out by the book burners of the new censors in big tech. But so let's talk about media, if we can, for a minute. Again, one marvels at the ability of people who call themselves journalists to be unmoved by the plight of Julian Assange in a London dungeon, and to be ready to haiku, as you wonderfully put it, for Israel in the most base and degraded way. And you name-check the New York Times, but the New York Times not alone, is it? The New York Times, all of these television stations, MSNBC and Rachel Maddow and all of these people. Again, I ask, although I appreciate it's difficult to come up with an answer, what moves them? What allows them to sleep at night, knowing as they must, because they're seeing the same videos as you and me? It just seems to have a different impact on them than it does on us.
You know, I always say, George, that corporate media, you know, as we know, is subsidized by the very institutions that journalists should be exposing, right? Banks, oil companies, defense contractors. When you are a journalist getting into corporate media, you are a willing agent of empire. You have to believe in the reigning orthodoxy of global capitalism and of U.S. imperialism. Otherwise, you will not sustain jobs in these institutions. And so I think people like Rachel Maddow, Andrea Mitchell, I mean, Anderson Cooper, we know that he, you know, he donned a CIA jacket. He tried to get into the CIA just like Tucker Carlson once did. I mean, look, I think it's really simple. I mean, you have to be a true believer in the system, and you have to wash away all of the crimes and atrocities that are being committed in our names, and you have to apologize for them. And I think that we see revolts happening within the institutions, people writing, you know, sternly worded letters, whether it be in the halls of Congress, these staffers, or within the halls of the New York Times, saying this is too much for us. Look, leave your posts, okay? Because at this point, you're an accomplice. Because institutions like the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of these Beltway media publications and so-called papers of record, they are accomplices to genocide. Those who are running the editorial line in these publications should be brought up to The Hague, right? For complicity, for engineering and manufacturing consent among the American public. Because if these headlines were written differently, if the stories weren't buried, the leads weren't buried at paragraph 8, you know, I mean, I think that the public opinion would have been changed decades ago, George. We know how this works. And when you have an institution like the New York Times, I mean, I have to keep going back to that because that's what so many liberals take as the Bible in this country. But look at Judith Miller, you know, coming out saying, oh, yeah, we screwed up in the wake of the Iraq War. And look at them today. They've learned nothing. We have to reject these institutions wholly, right? And once and for all. And I think that's what we're seeing. I mean, generationally, there's such a huge rejection of that corporate line. And, you know, people are finally seeking truth elsewhere and knowing we're not going to change these institutions by asking them to cover us fairly or to humanize Palestinians or Arabs. No, that's not the way it's going to work, because we know that all of these journalists, they have opinions. They want to appear neutral. No, they just couch their opinions in think tanks that are subsidized by the very same blood lust, genocidal war profiteers that dictate to us what's going on corporate media and these forums and panels. You know, it's sick, George. And I think that we know the way it works. And that's why, you know, previously I went to a network like RT or Telesur to circumvent that bias, but to tell the truth about my country, because you're simply not allowed to. But look at what they did. They banned, they treated us like infants. They infantilized us all by just succumbing to censorship, like they were chomping at the bit to do for so long. Look at what they did to Tucker Carlson for going and interviewing Putin. They said he should be sanctioned, that Putin should not be heard. Look, I think what, you know, I have a lot of disagreements with Putin, but why should we not hear from world leaders? I want to judge with my own mind and to see with my own eyes what people think and what people are telling me about global affairs. I'm not a child, so I don't like global powers and media giants algorithmically dictating and narrating and curating my reality. I can speak and learn for myself, but that's what they're scared of again, George. They're scared of people with free minds to learn and choose for themselves what the truth and reality really is.
Now, Oscar Wilde said we were two people divided by a common language. I say that Britain and its political class are two cheeks of the same arse. You'd say two cheeks of the same ass. But it is true, isn't it, that you've got a choice between Genocide Joe and Zion Don. And we've got a choice between, if anything, two even more midget intellects and political ideologies. How are we going to get out of this, Abby?
I mean, the left is so disenfranchised in this country. We're blamed for every political upset. And, you know, they just don't cater to us at all. We know there's no real third party option in this country. The entire system is completely rigged. At this point, even members of the squad are essentially just institutional obstacles from us attaining anything that we actually want to do. I think this genocide has really revealed plainly who's on our side and who's not, George. I mean, look, there's so many elements that are rigged in the American political system. It's a complete joke. And I think, you know, in the wake of Bernie, I was very excited about the Bernie movement, not necessarily Bernie himself, although he certainly was one of the better figures in Congress for the last several decades. And I think true to a certain extent to himself. But at this point, I think in the wake of that, the millions of people who simply didn't know where to go after Genocide Joe took office and they picked the top cop on the heels of the Black Lives Matter movement to really just say F you to the millions of people who are out in the streets, the biggest social movement since civil rights in this country. I think that really says it all about the utter contempt that the political establishment has for social movements and for the youth. And look, the youth is looking at the future of this country and saying we're on the precipice of climate catastrophe. Half of the people living in this country don't have enough money in savings. They're living paycheck to paycheck. No wonder half of the eligible voters don't engage at all. But they're just simply going to blame Jill Stein or Cornel West or the young people for not voting for Genocide Joe a second term. And, you know, in the words of my Palestinian friend Ali Abu Nima, he said, look, Joe Biden is our Hitler. So don't tell me that he's the lesser of two evils. Even if Trump would be doing the exact same thing, he is our Hitler. So how dare you talk down to us and tell us, pathologize the left and say, no, you don't understand. Trump could be in office. Well, look, this is already the worst case scenario for so many people and people who just are moral people. You don't have to be Muslim, Palestinian, right? Or Arab. You simply just have to be a free thinker and someone who has moral courage and sees with their own eyes what is going on. So I think Joe Biden needs to be and will be punished at the ballot box. And there's really no other avenues to do so politically other than what people are doing, getting out in the streets in the millions, right? And that's what needs to happen. We need to shut down business as usual, George, and we need to keep going until they listen to us, until they are forced to act on our behalf. And that's the only way social change has ever happened in this country. Voting is secondary. Voting happens once every 2 to 4 years. The real change that happens is the people who are out in the streets every single day, all day, making it happen. And we will continue to do so until we have a viable future.
Amen, amen. I know, I just know, I can see it on my screen. People are asking where they can find your work now, Abby. What's the best place for people to go to follow you?
Go to my social media. I'm at Abby Martin on Twitter. You can go to earthsgreatestenemy.com. I'm in the throes of a new movie, George, exposing the totality of U.S. military pollution. It started off as a project about carbon emissions, and now the U.S. military is completely exempt and one of the largest contributors, equivalent to 140 countries. But it goes so much farther than that. So we're exposing the entire system. It's been in the works for 3 years. It's coming out this year. Check it out. And also GazaFightsForFreedom.com, available in several languages. Please spread the word. Empire Files on YouTube is where you can see all of my interviews and short documentaries. George, thank you so much. Much power to you and much respect.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine. Love to all the family. That is the great Abby Martin, journalist, host of the Empire Files. Quick break, and I'll be right back with your calls for the rest of the show.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
So here's the end of the poll. 55,363 votes have been cast. 1% say Starmer, 99% say Galloway. On Twitter, 15 against 85. On the YouTube community poll, 4 against 96. On the YouTube stream, 4 against 96. What a truly extraordinary poll. That's what you call a landslide victory. Ali is in Pakistan. Go ahead, Ali.
Hi. Hi, George. This is Ali. And I just wanted to say that you have really made an astonishing kind of victory over here. Not only for the people of Rochdale, this is also kind of like English voice coming out for the entire Muslim community around the world. I can tell you that. That is from the bottom of my heart, that I really believe that even Muslim MPs in the United Kingdom could not do what you do for the Muslim community. Not only for that, of course, you do it for the entire people that you are
for. The proper, the Ummah is all of humanity for me, Ali. And I was accused in The Guardian, I say accused in inverted commas, I was accused in the Liberal Guardian today of seeking to unite Muslims angry over Gaza with alienated white working class people, unquote.
That is a very narrow kind of, those are the politicians they only focus
on. I'm guilty of that, Ali. Yeah, Ali, I'm totally guilty of seeking to ally Muslim voters in Britain with alienated white working class people in Britain. I'm totally guilty of that. I make it my life's work to unite all the communities in Britain who are losing from the kind of country, the kind of government, the kind of system which we have here in Britain. And I will unite such people as long as God gives me breath. But just think about this. This is posed as an accusation that I am seeking to unite angry Muslims and alienated white working class people. Two records tonight. First, it was a record number of calls. Brace yourself for this number. 677 people called the show trying to get on this evening since 7 p.m. 677. It was a record poll, 55,363 votes, and a record YouTube audience. By next Sunday, this show will finish at 3 million viewers. And I'd like to thank every one of you, not just for tonight, but for the last 330 or so episodes. I give you a solemn and binding promise that this show will continue. It is the mother of all talk shows. It is the open university of the airwaves. It is global. We've had calls from Canada, from Jamaica, from the United States, from Scotland, from England, from Ireland. This is a global university of the airwaves. It's in the English language, but the parts of the world that are listening to us are far wider than the Anglosphere. Our podcast is in the charts, sometimes topping the charts, in places way outside of the Anglosphere, like Tunisia and like the United Arab Emirates. Rochdale was trending yesterday in the United Arab Emirates. In Lebanon, Rochdale was trending at number one. All over the world, people have been waiting for the kind of breakthrough that we made by the grace of God and much hard work by hundreds of people in my constituency who worked in cold weather with warm hearts for the cause of haq, the cause of justice, the cause of right. And I'll continue to do my political work, whether on the airwaves, on my feet in the House of Commons, on my feet on Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. on the steps of the Town Hall Civic Centre in Catford in Lewisham, where John Hamilton, our candidate for mayor of Lewisham, and I will address you at 5 p.m. on Tuesday in Lewisham in Catford on the steps of the Civic Centre. I will be in behind a bulletproof screen, I hope, provided by Mr. Speaker, because I am troubled that Britain has a Prime Minister so reckless, so cynical, that in order to set up a general election campaign, which I believe to be more or less imminent, to set up me as the face and the Muslims in Britain as the body to be whipped, or worse, in the course of these next few weeks and months, in order to cynically divide our people, channel hatred against a section of our community and against me in particular. I regret it very much that he did that. I think he'll be judged very poorly for having done so, if not absurdly, as one caller earlier pointed out. But I give him notice. I give the whole political class notice. I am not afraid. I believe that I'm doing God's work, and I'll continue to do it as long as God gives me breath. And so I can tell you that, God willing, I'll be back on Wednesday at 7 p.m. with the midweek mother of all talk shows. So please be there. You are here tonight in record numbers. Let's keep that record up. Follow me on all my social media platforms. Support me on patreon.com/George Galloway. It's been marvelous. I hope it was for you too.